ready, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Friday, 28th day of October, 2011. Quick look at the numbers. The Dow down 8 points, S&P down 4, the comp down 10. Pretty quiet session today compared to yesterday's extreme upside volatility. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
I know that you have to leave pretty quickly, so
yes.
A couple things I'll cover, but I'll go ahead and just... be a gentleman and pass you the mic, the camera, hair, makeup. Get over to Michael.
And, I put my radio face on early today, so I'm ready.
Yeah, all right,
just grab it and okay. There. All right. Let me just check one more thing. Dashboard options.
Oh, that's right. We're going to run the new software.
Actually, yes, we are. But, I just wanted to make sure that I had the ability to. There it is right there. All right. Now we'll see if I can get through this whole thing without hacking.
We are accepting all home remedies for sore throats. Just type it into the box. Honey and clove oil, whatever you got. Michael needs it, so just type it in.
Yes, I need it. Just type it in. Type it in, whatever it is. I think Robert... I wrote down your new password, by the way. I think Robert had some before that he had sent off to me. Anyway, let's... let me just do this. We're going to record it a little bit different today, so let's see if we can do it this way from now on. All right. I'm going to start the recording here in 3, 2, and... 1. Alright. Just waiting. There we go. Alright, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Friday, October 28th, 2011. We're going to go over the morning's trades. We didn't have a ton of trades this morning. We had nothing on the YM. We missed a couple trades on the YM. And on the ES, we had a bunch of break-even trades. The market really didn't have any follow-through until just recently here when it made this move down. I'm short right here from a different account. But let's just go through the trades that it did have this morning, okay? You see how much easier it is to move my stuff around when I'm using this recording software. It's much easier. Anyway, for the recap, first thing we had here was a bubble here and a pullback down to the BBC. We went long. We had 4 or 5 ticks profit in the trade. We moved our stop up to break even, and it came back and took us out of break even. But then it flipped down here. We had a fresh bubble and a pullback up to the BBC. We went short. Again, 4 or 5 ticks in the trade. Moved our stop to break even, and it came back and took us out of break even. We had a lower swing with a little tiny bubble right there, so we did it again. It pulled up here, and we went short. We had 4 ticks profit in the trade. Moved the stop to break even, and it took us out of break even. All right, this one right over here I missed. At this point, I had drawn in a range on the morning, and I had said I wasn't going to be taking any trades until we get out of that range. Right here, this is one of George's trades. We had 3 ticks above the elbow right there, above the elbow break, and the pullback down was a smooth pullback down to the BBC. That one did make it a full 2 points, but you had to have, there's no guarantee the fill at this end of it. And price just moved around a little bit. You see the BBC is staying right inside the box all the way through here. This was another one of George's trades right here. The pullback to the BBC inside the box. I didn't take it again, but again, it did work out. It went to the profit target. All right, then we finally got outside the box over here, but we had a double top in, so there was nothing we could do there. Went back in the box, came back out of the box, going into the zone. We actually went just a hair above the zone right here, okay, right here. And we didn't have any opportunity in there. Okay, and right now, this is where we stand. So we had 4 break-even trades this morning on the ES, and that was it for the actual trades that we took. Now I'll come over here and I'll show you the YM really quickly because I missed a few trades over here. Early on, we had a bullish cross right here with a pullback down to the BBC. This right here is where you would have been entering. Obviously that went on nicely to at least to the 20 tick profit target, if not more. We had a bearish cross right here. I didn't mark this one. I should mark this one too. I didn't take this one either. I didn't take any trades on the YM today. This one would have stopped out. Okay. All the trades in orange are trades I didn't take. Okay. Trades in yellow are trades I did take. Trades in brown are George's trades. But right here, we would have had, after the bearish cross, we would have had a pullback up here looking for a short and a push down. That would have stopped it out. Okay. Then we had a bullish cross here with a pullback down again. This was down here at 39, and it rose up 40 points off of that. Okay. Right now, there's actually a short going on right now. I think I can actually take it right here at 150. I'll put the trade on here at 150. Just for the sake of putting the trade on here. Actually, it's 149 that I'm putting it on. And I'm also short over here right now. But that is the morning session. Okay, that was the whole morning session. I'll go over some stuff here. Not on the 7 minute, but on the 10 minute. I mean the 10,000 contract. You see, we had a bullish cross here with a pullback down to the BBC. This was the same exact entry point as we had over here on the 4 tick range earlier on. Okay, it went up and it was held in or contained by the MA1. All right. We had a bearish cross and a pullback here, and it went down. Hey, I got to manage straight over here. I didn't get filled on it. Sorry. All right. Then I have to cancel that trade. I didn't get filled on that, but I do have to manage another trade here. Hang on a second. I'm short over here on the from 77 quarter over here. All right. That said, we went. Right here was a pullback to the BBC for the long opportunity. That went up to the MA1 here. I think it gave 2 points. Then it came back down. Now over here, we had another bullish cross right here with a pullback down to the BBC. We were still inside that range. You see these blue horizontal lines that I drew here. That was the range that we were operating in this morning. And I really didn't want to trade inside that range. And I didn't. you can see right here after the bearish cross, we pull back up to the BBC. So there is a shorting opportunity here. But I'm actually short over here from the pullback to the BBC on the 4-tick range. And that was the whole morning. That was it right there in a nutshell. Okay. If anybody has any questions, you can throw them out there right now, and then I'll try to answer them. I'll try to answer them in this recording. If not, then I'm going to stop the recording and we can move on. Okay. Questions? Questions? No questions. All right. I'm going to shut the recording off. All right. The recording has stopped.
Okay.
This move over here on the YM, the entry point would have been right here. Okay. Right up here at 1250. It went down here. Just about to the MA1, which is where the target would have been on that. That's why I got out of that trade. Okay. And that's why I took the trade off, because it had already pretty much done what I would have expected out of it. It went up here, bounced off the BBC, and went down to the MA1 pretty much.
Right.
That's why I took the trade off there. Now, I'm still short over here on the ES, because I'm looking for a couple of points out of that one. Okay.
That's what we refer to as the
is a 4-tick trade not valid because of the trend up. Oh, okay, I see what you mean in here, Bruce. No, because there's no gaps in here on the move up. You can draw a trend line up, of course, but there's no gaps in there. Okay, and that's the important thing, is that there are no gaps.
I may have come up with a way of visualizing that. How about missing a tooth?
Yeah, that's sort of what it's like. It's like a missing tooth.
By Jove. Try that, Bruce. Think of it as a missing tooth. That just popped into my head, but yeah, anyway.
That's sort of, let me see if I can find an example of it. It's tough because we didn't have any trades this morning, so. But, well, like right in here. Suppose you were looking for it to enter over here. Right in here. This area right here is where the tooth would be missing. I should show you a picture of Jake right now, my son. Both of his front teeth are missing. Why is this? This is backwards. Here we go. Okay. I'm out of this trade now. I'm break even, guys. All right. That was it. That was all we had for the morning. And I'm going to try to load it right now. That was the first time we ever used this particular software to
did it work
to make the
for
recap
you?
Record. It definitely did. It worked much better. But now the real test is going to be getting it out there in the in YouTube. So I'll do that right now. I'll let you know how that goes.
Okay. And if you run into any size limitations, which you shouldn't, but if you do, we can override that. So.
Okay. Yeah, we have. They gave us.
All right.
He gives extra space and time and all those things.
All right. I'm going to grab the charts back here for a minute.
Okay.
On a more somber note, guys, I'm going to go over some of the market stuff, but I want to. It's important for me to touch on this. We have a large audience. Many of you are here in Phoenix. And I know that some of the listeners, I don't know if you're here right now or not, but I know that some of you do attend Phoenix First Assembly here in Phoenix. And you may have already heard the news or not heard the news, but I do want to dedicate today's show to the memory of Pastor Leo Godzich and also John Muguera. They were in Kampala this week to do a marriage conference. Pastor Leo is famous around the world for his marriage conferences. And there was a tragic car accident yesterday afternoon that took the life of Pastor Leo, Pastor John, and also their driver. I can say this, that, you know, they went doing what they all loved to do best, and that was to share the gospel and to touch people around the world, marriages. That was the cornerstone of his ministry. His organization was NAME, National, I forget what it even stands for at the moment. But many of you, I know, in the Phoenix area, know Pastor Leo. You may have gone to his conferences, to his seminars. And he was on the mission field when God called him home. And so keep his family and the families of the others in your prayers. Times like these are tough. People begin to question, well, you know, he should have been at home, you know, or things like that. And it's not how God would have you think about it. He would have you think about it in the way that he was a great friend and a minister to many, and that he died as he lived, giving his life for others. And we should all aspire to that very thing. We talked a little bit this morning in the live trading room about how different things are in third world countries. When a tragic accident happens here in the U.S., somebody screams, call 911, and then, you know, the ambulances and the paramedics and this army shows up. But in a third world country like Uganda, when something like this happens, there's no army to show up. The people, the friends, the family members, they have to go. They have to take care of everything. I received the phone call yesterday from the site of the accident. Literally within moments of it happening. And it was very traumatic for Pastor Christopher. He runs our orphanage there in Kampala. And he was good friends with both Pastor John and Pastor Leo. And he was, we've sent many missionary teams over. He's had many teams come to visit, but he's never experienced one that ended in tragedy such as this. So please keep Pastor Christopher and his family and the church there in your prayers as well. Difficult time for all involved. So with that said, and my heart and prayers go out to all the families, myself, and to all the members at Phoenix First Assembly. You lost someone that I know is very important to you. Okay, guys, back to the markets here. We had this 1281.82 on the upside for the entire week. Price did manage to break out to the upside yesterday afternoon. It failed up at 88. Came back, gave us a bearish cross, and a nice little move from 85 back below the zone. We had a couple tweets last night, and depending upon how you played it, you might still be in the tweet, or you might have just taken a small profit and been out. The ES was short at 1277, so there was a couple points here, then there was a drawdown, and as you can see, the market is just kind of been back and forth. At this point, if you were holding on to that trade, if you weathered the drawdown, you're back in not exactly tall cotton, but all right, Michael, I got your message, and I'll see you later. So, all right, and so here we sit now at 1274. Our swing low this morning has been 1272.75. So that's an area that we want to watch here on our charts as we go to David and chat with him. This area, it's the bottom of this range that's been established on the overnight. You can see on the overnight, we attempted a rally going into the overnight session. It failed. And then on the London Open, we rallied right up to the zone at 81.82. We actually hit 82 and a quarter. That stopped it dead in its tracks, or that's where it stopped. Back down. And then trading across here this morning was just, you know, there was one good move right here that was good for 4 points from stem to stern, 78 to 82. And now we're in the process of a good move, as I would call it, on the downside. The entry there would have been a pullback to 78. Now this is interesting, and you'll see this a lot, okay? The long was established at 78, and now the short is established at 78, which ties in to what you often hear me say, and David say. In fact, I think I picked it up from David. I picked it up from Doug, I think. Either way, important prices or important levels are almost always tested. Well, 81.82, that was certainly important. It got tested. 78 was tested. We got a move to the upside. And now it got tested and we got a move to the downside. From 78, we've moved to 75. So we had a 3-point move to the downside so far. Michael asks, how often do you see the market go to the most extreme weekly trading zone, and how often does it hold price? That's a very interesting question, Michael, and you're relatively new around these parts, so I'm going to share this with you. I kept a running total for a long time on the front of the website, and we were at, price would close inside of the weekly trading zones. They did close inside of the weekly trading zones for 98% of the time. But as more time got added, it only took 1 week closing outside to knock that number down. And so I was continually changing it, adjusting it, recalculating it, and then based on some advice, some compliance advice, which I really don't have to be compliant with anybody about anything because I'm not a licensed investment advisor or broker, but in the interest of clarity, I decided to take down the percentage figure. So I'm going to say over the last 2 years, if I were still running the numbers and trying to make it a percentage, I would say it's going to still be around 90%. I don't remember the last time that we closed outside of the zones. I haven't been tracking it as closely as when I had that little widget on the front page. But as you can, but often now, often what we would see, Michael, is a run to the extreme like this, but then you pop back in, and without, well, whatever percentage of the time, at the closing bell on Friday, we're back inside of the zones. How often does it run to the extreme? That's really a different question than how often it closes inside. It closes inside a high percentage of the time, and even when it runs to the extreme, it will most times pop back in. And it's often a, as you can see here, I mean, if you shorted it on the first trip up, that's first trip, yeah. You shorted on the first trip up. There was so much momentum behind this thing. I mean, you got a little something here on this pullback, but then it pushed right on through. Now that it's kind of gotten it out of its system, okay, you can see that it's weakening. Overnight, we hit 82 and a quarter. This morning, we hit 82 and a quarter. And I would be a bit surprised to see us even visit that area again today. We might. Okay. I just don't think there's anything going on that's going to get this market moving today. We have light volume. We checked volume figures right before we left the live trading room this morning. And the day session and the Globex session together, there's only like 1 million contracts traded. So that's pretty light. So that's what it looks like there. Here's what it looks like on an hourly chart. Okay, once we popped up through that thing yesterday, okay, we rode this blue line, okay, all the way up, the CFMA1, that's the backbone of our indicator set. Okay, we rode it up, and then we got on the back side of it. Once we spiked the 81.82, we came back, and then, just so you don't think you're having a hard time seeing, let me blow up these candles. Look at these little bitty candles, okay? Small bodies inside of the weekly zone. 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hour. And then we get that drop, tag it, drop, tag it, drop. A little different perspective, but the same thing. That. And that. Same market. Just different time perspective. It's when you get into this that you can actually see the trade setups. You can see the long there. You can see the short there. When you go out to the hourly, you see where the important areas are, but you don't necessarily see the trade setup. So that was a long-winded way of answering your question, Michael. Thank you very much. With that, we're going to pause for station identification and go straight to Mr. David Williams at PageTrader.com.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310. And we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Glad it's Friday.
I'm glad it's Friday. I have three back.
I'm glad it's Friday as well.
I have three back-to-back days with no government intervention in my life. No social worker, no guardian ad litem, no CPS worker, no crisis nursery worker. None of them. Although you're always subject to a surprise visit. There's no scheduled interaction for 3 days, so. I have a real issue with the whole, I love the kids, I love having the kids in my home, I love loving the kids, but the whole Big Brother aspect of it, I could do without, but
yeah,
it is what it is, so you make the best of it.
It is what it is, yeah. Well, we've had a really interesting week this week in the market. If you just take a look at what's happened, whether it's a record or not, and I'm sure it is a record in the Dow, for the biggest up month or whatever,
yeah,
it really has just goes to show just what an amazing thing the markets are, that this move had to have surprised virtually everyone, in spite of the fact that you may have had a forecast bottom, which we did. The size of the move, pretty much nobody saw that coming. And isn't it true, don't you see this in life over and over again, that when the really big events happen, they're a surprise to just about everybody. And I'm not talking about just market moves. I'm talking about the big things that happen in life, the big, either the tragedies or the, everything always comes as a surprise. The majority of the big changes in history come as surprises. The starting and ending of wars. The list can go on and on and on. sometimes in rare instances, you know, everybody knows something. But I mean, a good example, I've made this before, you know, the year 2000, everybody was so sure things were going to go. It doesn't work that way. You know, it doesn't work that everybody can have all this information in advance of these huge major events that are going to take place, even if there's some unknowns to them that everybody would know about it. That's why I'm actually pretty skeptical, roughly speaking, about the Mayan calendar day 2012, December 23rd. It's not that I don't believe that the date is important from the Mayan perspective and how they did their accounts and everything else. It's probably a very valuable piece of information. And I thought that cartoon was really funny where this is, you know, this is really going to freak some people out, you know. The guy, you know, I ran out of room. Sorry, you know, this is all the space I had. That's really funny. You might show that again for people who may be new on the program today, but either way, that's why I'm a little skeptical about that date being something on that very date being important, that something really big is going to happen, because it doesn't really tie in well with the history of man. We just don't have information like that that lets us know when cataclysmic or even good things, really big good things, are going to happen. This market movement, in spite of the fact that it could have been forecast and was as a bottom, we did not know that they were going to do the entire forecast move within 1 month's time. That from October 4th till now, or till yesterday, from October 4th till the 27th, you know, how many trading days is that? You know, it might be 20 trading days or 18 trading days or something, that this big of a move would have come. And this is one of the reasons I love markets, is because it just, this stuff really does happen. And you can really be a part of it. You might miss it, but it's just an amazing thing that it can happen, set up in such a way that it can be shown to happen. This is the thing. So the Mayan guy is standing there and he says, I only had enough room to go up to 2012. And another guy says, ha, that'll freak out somebody. Yeah, that'll freak somebody out someday. Yeah, and it surely did. So I'm not counting, I'm not making this an outright forecast, but I'm not counting on December 23rd, 24th of 2012 to be a date that big explosions, aliens landing, the renewal of all life and everything occurring right on that date. Nor am I a believer that it's going to happen in even surrounding that time. I think in a broader sense, if something does happen, like I said, my best viewpoint would be that we might, upon retrospect, looking back, might be able to say, you know, around that time, this is really where such and such started. Very much like you might be able to look back on, in your life and say, you know, this was the turning point for me, and that you can see it now by looking back. But on that specific day, maybe nothing that big happened, or maybe you didn't recognize that that event would start this whole chain of events that you now are a, you know, radio talk show host or whatever, you know, whatever you're thinking about. So it'll be interesting to see. These moves in the market many times can be forecast right to the price level or beyond. This is a really great example of something that I think the majority of professionals, the short-term, the day traders, the non-professionals, nobody saw this big of a move coming. And it kind of highlights the fact that just about anything can happen. The market really is big enough to, it's as big as life. It's not fixed at the borders. There's no wall there that says they can't go further than this. There's, the market can do just about anything because the market is as big as life. And so anyway, it's just an amazing phenomena that they exist. One of the things that I really love about markets, other than just what I said, is that the fact that they just exist and you can walk up to them and participate in them without any special, really, other than having to have a brokerage account. It's really very easy to get into the markets and buy or sell and see if you can do something. It's almost like walking up to a ping pong tournament or a tennis tournament, and you don't have to have any special, you know how they do the things where they have zillions of, I happen to like ping pong, and many years ago they had a whole ping pong tournament. They were going to have these two top guys play, But in order to find out who the top guys are, they have this huge room at the convention center with all these ping pong tables, and people are playing off against each other and tying and pairing off until finally you get the top two people. Well, you know, you could just walk in off the street being a nobody and pick up a paddle, and if you can play, you could end up winning the whole thing. You know, you could end up beating all these people and play all the way up to the top. That's kind of how the markets are. They allow you to just walk in off the street, sit down in front of your computer, or go to the floor and scream on the floor. Of course, that requires a special jacket and some other things, but you can sit down in front of your computer with very little upfront cost, relatively speaking, and begin to trade. And I love that about the markets, that they're free, they're open. There's not really too many difficult limitations to get into the game. Playing the game, trading properly, could take you some time to practice and get down correctly. And and everyone still makes, no matter who you are and no matter how long you've been trading, people still will make mistakes and have errors and have a bad day or have an emotional impulse that makes them do something wrong. But as long as you contain those and manage that, you know, if you know what you're doing, you can actually have a lot of fun and spend a lot of time enjoying market moves and setups and all the stuff that we talk about on this program. Because we do cover a lot about what you shouldn't do, et cetera, but when you do come to the point where you're happy and understand where you are, who you are in the market and all the things we've talked about in the past, it really can be very enjoyable to trade the market. And I'm sure that some people have felt that kind of enjoyment, not the compulsory enjoyment, not the enjoyment of being the gambler, not the enjoyment because you have nothing to do with your life, but because you really recognize these moves are going to happen again and again and again. Not necessarily today's, you know, the big move that we've had in the last few days, but plenty of big moves are going to happen that you can take advantage of and have a really nice time with the markets. You know, trying to put the trade together right, it's a great challenge. You know, it's a nice challenge. It's fun. And if you follow some pretty cardinal and basic rules, one of the main ones, of course, which is to not let your losses run and to not add to losing positions, and I want to say, having said that, there are cases where I have added to losing positions. Even though it's really a cardinal rule that I don't, they're rare instances. But just as an example, if the market had been going down and I was looking for a bottom, you know, at some price level or something, the market began to move through that and it didn't go very far, but it was now another cycle was there for a secondary bottom. And the market confirmed, while still not hitting my original stop, I would, in some cases, even today, add to that position because I have a whole new independent signal telling me to do something that, independent of whether or not I'm in the market already, this is a signal I would be taking anyway. And as long as you're really honest about it and it really is a signal you'd be taking, then adding to that position is essentially putting on a new position that you would have taken under the current conditions that are in front of you. And so I will do that sometimes and add to a position. I have done that when we, you know, a couple of years back, we put up a statement on our website where I had done that a couple of times during the month where we took that 1 month and we're trading one large E-mini contract. I think once or twice in there, I think I slipped in a second contract, if my memory serves, because something like that had occurred.
The equivalent of five minis, correct?
The large is equivalent to five minis, and there's no need to trade the large anymore. The large is really going to go away. It's going the volume on the pit session, as opposed to the day session. You know, we call the day session whatever is not Globex is the day session, but in the large contract, you could refer to it as the pit session. That's where there really are people in the pit buying and selling. That's just dwindling off. That's just slowly but surely just going away, and it is going to be gone. I don't know when, but it certainly is going away. There's less and less people trading in that, and the E-minis, you know, took off like a rocket and continue to be the bulk of that volume by every measure. So, I'm sorry, Dwayne.
I didn't say anything.
Did you say something?
No.
Okay. Anyway, let's take a quick look at today. We've had a quiet day. This is not unusual after a really big run-up like what we had yesterday. Yesterday I mentioned that 88 would be the next number on the upside, that if they got through the initial level that they had been testing the 80, I think it was 82, I can't remember, that 88 would be the next important level. And they did get up to 89.25, and our current decline continues off of that level. Because these levels, and we don't have Mike Reed on right now, and he's actually somebody who sort of specializes in remembering mm-hmm. where old price levels were many, many months back. He's not using the chart, so to speak, because the chart may be gone, because the contract may have expired.
Exactly, yeah.
So he's not going to be able to, and we are not going to be able to go back and look sometimes at previous price movements if that's something that you do to determine support and resistance. And in this particular case, he would be somebody who might have had a number like an 88 as well because of his particular way. I'm just assuming that he would have, whether or not the contract existed back, you know, that far back, where, because you'd have to go quite a ways back, wouldn't you, to find that level. So we didn't do that in order to get the 88. 88 happens to be, this is one of those things where we have to turn to another viewpoint of the market in order to get a level. If you're using previous support and resistance levels as important, that's fine, and that's a very valid way, and you can, you know, you can be very skilled at that. Sometimes those levels aren't there for you to do that work. And so sometimes you have to develop a different, separate way. As an example, when a market's breaking to all-time new highs, mm-hmm. where are you going to get your levels from? Mm-hmm. How do you know where the critical level is? And there are several ways to do it. We have a technique called squares, which, you know, when I say that word, a lot of people will think of GAN, but it has nothing to do with that technique at all. It's just a name that I named many, many years ago before I really knew much about the GAN methodology. But and then there's natural numbers, which we've talked about before, the technical analysis of numbers themselves, and that's numbers are constructed in a certain way that the math behind the number makes the number important. And for those, I mean, I might take a minute and just go over it. I'll just give you a couple examples. These are very basic, and it goes further than this. This is a backdrop thing that I use. I don't use this as a very front-loaded thing in my setups, but these are really interesting, and sometime I'd like to spend more time really thinking about this particular side of the market. The market goes up and down and leaves support and resistance levels behind. But if there is no market at all, what are the important levels? Are there important numbers if there's no market on your screen at all? There's no gold, no silver, no cotton, no copper, no S&P, no euro. It's just an empty screen. And with that empty screen, would there be an important number? Does any number, are all the numbers the same, or are there numbers that have some importance independent of the market? And my work has suggested that there are important levels that are independent of any market's movement at all. And you can call those natural levels. Many years ago on the program came up with the phrase that, you know, we're doing technical analysis of numbers rather than technical analysis of the markets. So one form of technical analysis of the numbers would be to take a number and start looking at the qualities of that number. Is it an odd or is it an even number? There might be something really important in the fact that a number is odd or even. Does the number divide evenly into some other number? How many times does it divide evenly into another number? The number 6 is a special number. For one reason, it can swallow whole both an odd and an even number. You can divide 2 as an even number into 6, and you can divide 3 into it. 3 is an odd number. So there's a technical aspect of that number. And of course, you can go and make a list of all the numbers that have that particular quality. You can go on and on. There's many other qualities to numbers that you might not necessarily think of. The basic ones are odd and even and some of the things we're talking about, but there's other qualities to numbers as well. It's a whole subject unto itself. I would like to spend more time thinking about and doing it, but so for us, the numbers that we gave out yesterday on the upside had to do with some of this type of work. The 88 level that was above had to do with this work. There's other ways. There's people that will use extensions of previous movements. You know, we all know about this, you know, either a Fibonacci extension or otherwise, and see if they can come up with something that the market would run to. One of the important things about natural numbers that makes them different, perhaps, than ordinary extension type of numbers. Nothing wrong with extensions, but the market tends very strongly to run from one level.
By the way, guys,
to the next level.
This is my real hair. These are not extensions.
Oh, there you go. See, now Dwayne's back to his real. This is the real Dwayne Reeves, where every little word he can make up wordplay on, he's doing that in the background, and we love him for that. That's now you're earning your pay, you know. Anyway, the market tends to run from one of these levels to the next one, and so if the market exceeds one level, it will tend to be trending towards the next one and test that next level. And so these can be used as trading targets, and that's one of the reasons why I use the natural numbers, is because they appear to have that quality, and I've demonstrated it many times on the program. And so it's a backdrop to some of the other things that we use. We may, at some point, we've talked about this, we may end up offering to teach the square principle, which is a very easy but not easy to see method. Once you see it, it's easy, but I don't think it's easy to see unless it's shown. For determining the majority of all the levels that are going to be important that the market is going to want to run to or be resisted from or supported on. And these are levels that are listed in our support and resistance panel for the most part each day. And many of the people that subscribe to us will use those levels and tie it in with their own trading for that day to help them. And this includes some of the institutional people, bigger traders, that they're only looking, they don't care where the information comes from. It doesn't bother them if they're using someone else's information. As long as they can rely on it, they're happy to get information from wherever they go. I happen to be a little different in this regard. I have trouble believing in other people's information because I've spent so much time sort of conditioning myself to look at it in a particular way. It is hard for me to take in somebody else's information and trade off of it. And I've been surprised that others can do that and, you know, believe in it. But that same thing would be difficult for me to do. It may be difficult for some of you as well.
If I didn't have my hands full right now, I would play George Michael Faith, but I'm in the middle of something, so I can't. I just thought I'd say that.
No, that's good. Just the thought of it is good.
When you're trading other people's stuff, you've got to have faith. You have to go in and make it your own. However,
yes.
I'll say this about what you do is that people can't make what you do their own until you teach them how to make it, like you've done with Reflected Wave, and like you just hinted, folks, I think we might have a new series of seminars coming up in 2012.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh,
it's
the square.
We'll see.
you know, so I think that's something that people really would like to learn, and I don't think you'd have much trouble filling up a seminar room if you wanted to teach that. I'm just saying.
Well, I'll tell you this, that the reflected wave principle is based on time. I mean, it really is a timing principle. It does have some price aspects in it with regard to being able to this trade to target, where there's a reflected wave breakout and the market runs to the trade to target, which is a beautiful thing. And honestly, a person could make a career out of just trading that one type of setup alone. But having said that, knowing important levels can be very valuable as well in timing the market, because important prices occur at important turns, and important turns occur at important prices. It's the same statement, just flipped around. It's kind of confusing to listen to it sometimes, but an important top will be, 9 times out of 10, will occur at an important price. What people have maybe missed, and I've never read this in a technical analysis book, this is just one of many observations that have struck me over the years, is that 99% of all turning points in the market occur at important prices. And you could say, well, what's an important price? And I could answer it in two ways. First, in my silly voice, first in my normal voice, and then a sort of a silly high-pitched whine. I could answer it in two ways. Number one, I could say squares are important. but you don't know what that is yet.
Right.
And the other one is the easy and the obvious, that the market is testing an old important bottom or an old important top. But the majority of all turning points will occur at important prices. And that insight, although it may sound like it's not much, maybe perhaps because it's just being given out verbally to you, but in the discovery of that being true was somewhat of a revelation for me. A lot of times when you hear new information, and I know a lot of people have heard this already on the radio program, but just for any of you who've discovered things for yourselves, when you're really in that, here's Dwayne's word, zone, and you know, you've really discovered something or found something, it's a profound, or can be a profound experience. It's no small thing to have a realization that something is true that you didn't know about before, or that something works a certain way that you didn't know about before and that you can prove it out. It's an extremely powerful experience to go through that. And then later, if someone else isn't necessarily thinking about that or searching it, you just mention to them a principle that you've derived out of that, it may not sound like much to them. But in many of these things that that have struck me over the years about markets that have come to me through just looking at markets and watching them, they are actually profound experiences in some cases, where you're just saying, oh my God, you know, is that the case? I mean, let me go check that out. And then you find out that it is the case, or enough of it is the case, that it really is something that you can put to use in your trading. And it's a very powerful experience. I'm sure many listeners have had experiences like that in their own ways, in their own life, in other areas, wherever. But that's something that's very true for me in the markets. And I found, excuse me, that over the years, that sometimes just by mentioning these things, you know, people just stare blankly at you, and I don't blame them. They're not really thinking of it in that same way that you were at the time that you discovered it. And, you know, there is a saying by a man named Vernon Howard, who's the wisest human being that I knew. Dwayne's second right behind him, but it's a far second.
What was his name again?
And that statement was,
what was his name
nature
again?
Never duplicates a path. Nature never duplicates a path. Mm. And so what does that mean? What does it mean that nature never duplicates a path? At first, it's one of those statements that you might
just... No two snowflakes are identical?
Well, there's one, but that
Dr.
your
Seuss
way...
Said that.
What's that?
Dr. Seuss said that.
Dr. Seuss said that?
No, I'm sorry. I'm not familiar with this gentleman. Who, say his name again, David.
Vernon Howard.
I want to jot that down so I can... Because, I mean, if you have this much respect for the guy... I mean,
oh, yeah. This is me maxed out. This
Vernon,
is, I have, this is the maximum.
Last name one more time. I'm writing it down.
Howard, H-O-W-A-R-D.
Okay. Got it.
Okay. Vernon was a author of a number of books that had to do with people growing up, and you could put the term spiritual to it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that he said, this wasn't a, there were no really Vernon Howard sayings that he walked around saying, but this was something that he did say, and it's a very profound thing, which is that nature never duplicates a path. And what that means, at least to me, is that the insight that you just arrived at, you being the philosopher, you being the researcher, you being an experimenter, you being a product designer, whatever it is, how you got there is a one-time thing. How you walked down that little roadway to have that insight, nature isn't going to duplicate that path for somebody else. That was unique to your quote-unquote awakening, whatever that awakening was. That awakening may have been the discovery of something in the markets. That awakening may have been a new product that you came up with. The light came on, you know, the light bulb turns on in your head. Well, when that happens, the pathway to that light turning on was unique to you. Nature won't duplicate that path in any other person, in any other way. That was an original path for you to get to that. Nature never duplicates a path. In his work, he is really referring to that pathway being the path that leads you to an insight about yourself. and insight about life, and that is also not duplicated. That you may arrive at the same shore that others have arrived at. The truth is the truth, but your path to it is going to be original. It's not going to be duplicated. You didn't duplicate someone else, and they didn't duplicate you. So I've always I was struck by that idea, and so I'm bringing this up because everybody who's had their own insight got to it in a certain way, in a way that nature doesn't duplicate that path, and it means something to you. It has some real value. You actually walked that unique path to get there, and so sometimes when you repeat something to people, it may not mean much to them because they didn't walk that path. But isn't that an interesting statement? I mean, you might pass that over at first, but I think if you think about it, you'll realize that all of the insights you've had, all of the things that have occurred to you where the light turned on, that path is never duplicated. That's a one-time thing for you. And that's just how it works. You know, and you can see it in the physical world as well. All the different pathways on a road or a street or whatever, they're not duplicated anywhere. It's all unique. So I thought that was a really interesting and, as expected from him, extremely profound in many ways statement, because it has to do with things that are much deeper than what we're talking about here. Go ahead.
Can you think of anything more permanently elating than to know that you are on the right road at last?
That sounds like a Vernon Howard statement.
It is.
Okay, well, there you are.
He also said, beauty is only skin deep, but it's a valuable asset if you're poor or haven't any sense. He did. I didn't make that up. I got that from Brain Quotes. It's right there.
That is funny. That is funny. That was probably him being funny.
Beauty is only skin deep, but it's... Yeah, I think it was.
And freedom begins as we become conscious of it.
Uh-huh.
So there goes, there's that statement again, that the unconsciousness is the trap. The moment you are conscious of something, you've just opened a whole new doorway. It begins the moment you're conscious of it. It's like darkness in a room. It's dark, but as soon as the light is turned on, the darkness is gone, and suddenly you have a whole new thing that you're aware of, the room. It was there all along, but it was dark. You couldn't see it. We can go through a whole bunch of these. He was a big person about a big thing for him, and if you want to take all the mysticism out of it, one of his biggest and most profound things was self-honesty. So if you think about all the mystical things a person could talk about and all the, you know, high states and all the other things, Vernon's big thing for advancement in this life was self-honesty.
Just be honest with yourself. That opens the door right there.
That's it. There it is. So that's another profound one, because many people want to light the candles, have the, you know, all the special accoutrements to say that there's something special going on. What is special is the ability for you to be absolutely self-honest with yourself. You don't have to go around and tell people everything about yourself, and nor is it their business to know it, but self-honesty, to admit to yourself what your actual condition is, not that you're trying to depress yourself or to elate yourself, but you are, to be honest, to actually be in contact with what actually is true about yourself, your actual state, your actual condition. And he made a big point of saying that real growth comes from self-honesty. And, you know, you can think about that and decide for yourself if that has any value in your own life. And if it doesn't apply to you, then my suggestion would be is you're not being honest. But, you know, it's for everybody to determine if those principles. But if you have some time, you might want to review some of his work. He's a very fiery teacher, a very emotional teacher, and you know, you might want to spend some time and see if anything that he has said has impressed you in some way, or maybe been helpful. That would be the ideal thing, wouldn't it? Something helpful that he could say, make you think about something, help you move past some problem that you have in your life. You know, one of the truths also in his class is that every problem you have is self-created. Now, that's a hard teaching, because many people would be very quick to say, no, that the real problems are over there, or this was caused by this person, this was caused by that. But go check it out and see for yourself if that's something that's useful to you. In the meantime, because this isn't a program about all of that. But we do cover a lot of subjects in this program. We do cover some ground, so give us a few moments for that, and I appreciate that we got a chance to cover that. I actually went to classes. I want to take one more minute here and say a few more things. I went to classes of his in Boulder City, Nevada. So he was an author that I read. I was deeply impressed by his books. The first book that I had read was Pathways to Perfect Living, which is still in print. And it was one of the most amazing books that I had ever read. And the style by which he writes is very character. There's a lot of character and a lot of color in his writing. It's very interesting. You find that you have difficulty putting down a Vernon Howard book. He had a way and a style of putting words together that could really get you going about a particular way of thinking or viewing something. And he used a lot of illustration and a lot of very clear language. He was not somebody to muck things up with big words or anything like that. It was very easy to see what he was saying. And later, when you would have an insight, you would realize, wow, his way of saying what I just actually experienced was exactly the simplest form it could be put in. It's almost like a mathematical equation. You see something that he talked about, you realize it in real life, and you thought, God, the way he said that, that's exactly the simplest way that that thing that I just saw could have possibly been verbalized. And he did that in advance of me having that insight. So you knew that he was onto something. You knew that there was something profound there, and it was very good for me. It may or may not be good for everybody at this point in their, you know, life or development, but it was very good for me, and it still is a part of my life. And so I encourage people to take a look at some of his work. That's Vernon Howard. I'm sure you can find him on the internet, and
I did,
or read some of the quotes. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a ton of stuff about him.
Yeah, there's a lot of students of his, and I want to remind you, don't judge the teacher by their students. That's not a good example. In this case, don't judge the teacher by his students, because some of his students are just plain nutty, just like any teacher's students would be. It's best to just go and get the information directly from the teacher himself, which, you know, Vernon's no longer alive. He died in 1992, but all of his work is out there, all of his books and stuff like that. So we'll move on to the market if you want, Dwayne, unless you have anything else you'd like to cover today.
No.
Let me ask you this.
Okay.
If you traded and earned $3,000 in 1 year from your trading, mm-hmm. and another fellow traded and made $100,000, what would you think if you were the $100,000 guy, mm-hmm. if a commission of some kind came around and said to you, you know, by earning that $100,000, you created a pretty severe imbalance here. Because these people over here, they only made $3,000 to $5,000 on their trading for the year, and you made $100,000. So what you did is you created a very big imbalance by making that much money. And the purpose of this commission is to try to right that imbalance that you have created. Because you've made 30 times or more what these other people have made. So the commission has decided that we're going to take $35,000 of what you made, the $100,000 guy, and we're going to charge you that so that we can take that and do the necessary things to kind of correct that imbalance that you went ahead and created by trading and earning the $100,000. Would you think that that's a fair program?
No.
Okay. Because that's essentially the idea that our current president has about people who make money. People who make money create a huge imbalance. I don't think it's a very fair idea, and I think everyone should pay their taxes, and I pay mine, and I'm sure you pay yours, Dwayne. But that's where he's coming from. And this is the reason I'm bringing this up is because I like the idea, I just want to mention this, if it comes about, of getting rid of the IRS and the just enormous cluster, you know what, of regulations and everything else that this system has become and going to some kind of a flat tax, even if it's a graduated flat tax where people who make less pay a smaller amount, people who make more pay a larger amount, whatever they want to do, a flat tax where there's no bookkeeping, no records, no IRS audits, none of the stuff, all the things that they go on. I'm hoping we get to that point. I hope it really is flat across the board, and I don't even mind if it is changed a little bit, because I don't have a problem with people who make more money paying more. The problem I have, and the reason I brought that example up, is because they already do pay more, but they're always the ones that are looked to for the more and the more and the more. If you want my honest opinion, the middle class needs to participate in the tax game just as much as anybody else does. There's more of the middle class than anybody else. And as you know,
40%
the really
of Americans
rich
pay
or,
no tax.
What's that?
40% of Americans pay no tax.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, they pay
and
sales tax if they go to the store to buy something.
They do, but they're not paying federal income tax. And I'm leaving the poor out, people that are under whatever the poverty line is, which I don't know what it is, but it might be $22,000 a year. Maybe. I'm not sure.
It's somewhere
maybe
in
somebody
that
knows.
Neighborhood. Yeah, it's in that neighborhood. Well, actually, if you're what is the thing? If you're if you have a four-person household and you earn below, now again, I may be way off on this, but I'm pretty sure I read this the other day. A family, like a husband, a wife, two kids, if you earn less than $43,000 a year, you qualify for government assistance in the form of food stamps.
Okay.
Now that's it was like a poster. And I was in a government office, and I was looking at this poster, and I scratched my head, and I go, can that be right? Because $43,000 sounds like, I mean, when I was younger, I mean, I remember at 21, my goal was to make a grand a week. We called it a G-Wiz back then. And if you made, if you made a G-Wiz, and I'm talking, this goes back to 79, 80, 81, you know, in 1980, if you made a G-Wiz for the week,
you were the man.
You were the man, you know?
Yeah, you were.
And so that's 50 grand a year, and now here we are all these years later, but still $43,000 seems like a significant amount of money. I know things aren't cheap. I mean, it just surprised me, I guess, that while the poverty level may be down at 22, 24, if you take into account a household of four people, I'll get the accurate figure so we can discuss it rationally. But I do believe if you made less than $43,000, you do qualify for food stamps if you have four people in your house. And I had no idea. I thought it would be, you know, much, much less than that.
Yeah. No, that is a surprise. I'm not sure why, except that for the same reason that you say, that seems like a chunk. But that for a family of four, and that is about it, before taxes, that's about $826 a week before taxes. And, you know, it's hard to live on small amounts of money, and maybe that nowadays is a small amount of money. It's surprising, but that may be the case. And you're also, remember, they said a family of four. That's not one person trying to get by. So, anyway, I'm hoping that we do see something with regard to our income tax on the flat tax, something that is fair, something that doesn't divide the rich and the middle class and the poor into these big, you know, ugly groups, because... And by the way, I happen to feel, just nobody asked, but I happen to feel that the middle class, the 40%, needs to be participating, not the poor, but the others. They need to be participating and paying. What about their fair share as well? You know, you guys want it all evil, you know, even across the board, everybody, you know, the far left loves everybody to have everything. There's something, you know, I've said this before. There's something about the far left. If anybody, their whole life is lived by comparison. If you have more than they do, you've committed some kind of a crime. You have to be punished or corrected in some way. If you've gotten ahead, if you drive a better car or have a bigger bank account, something needs to be done about that. An inequity has occurred. A balance needs to be regained because you got ahead. That's how they think. That's why I brought up that the argument about the, or the illustration about the guy, you know, with the three people that only made $3,000 for the year, the guy that made $100,000, he needs to pay in order to help balance the inequity there. That's how they think, that there was an inequity there. Even though the market has all that money and this guy just made better trading decisions, that's what they would want to do. There's something wrong with that kind of thinking in America, because that's not how we got to where we are today. And we've been through this before, and I'm only mentioning this. But I'm hoping that we do get to a some kind of a new tax system that doesn't revolve around even a consumption tax, even something where you only, you know, when you participate and you buy things, you pay it then, and then that gets forwarded. Any of these things are going to have their own problems, but none of them are going to have problems like the problems we have now with the enormous, unbelievable complexity of the tax code as it is now. I mean, almost everybody needs, unless you have taxes taken out of your check, they need an attorney, which is basically what everyone needs to look at their taxes to make sure that they're not inadvertently doing something wrong, you know, that they could be penalized or fined or whatever. It's just gone to, you know, no one can make the argument that it's a good system. So I hope we change over that so that it is a little more even and fair to everybody and stuff like that. I'm not saying that Herman Cain's 999 or anybody else's, you know, plan is the plan, but I just like that idea. I mean, it seems like such a relief. Would it not be a relief to you, Dwayne, to just know that you can, you know, it's paid at this one flat amount, there's no deductions, no record keeping, no there's no need for an audit, there's no need for anything.
How much money would it free up? Now, granted, we're going to put a lot of accountants and bookkeepers and revenuers, you know, out of a job. Unfortunately, that's the fallout. But how much time, energy, finances, and motivation is freed up and stirred up by knowing that you don't have to deal with that monster at the end
right.
of the year, end of the quarter, end of the week, whatever. I mean,
right.
It
right.
is, it is
no,
daunting.
It's...
I have to go to my accountant today. It's for nonprofits, which we have, you know, a 501c3 nonprofit. Monday is the deadline for those taxes to be filed, and people go like, "Well, you guys are a nonprofit, you don't pay." Well, you still got to file a tax return. So I got to go sit with the accountant, you know, and got to hash out and blah blah and this and that to send in a form to the government that says, "We don't owe you any money. We took in this much money, we gave away this much money, we did this, we did that, blah, blah, blah. Here's all mm-hmm. the records." And as you know, by the way, we're a 501c3 nonprofit, and therefore we don't pay taxes. And now we've proven to you that, you know, here's what happened. And so the accountant's I'm going to have to pay the accountant $1,000 to have compiled all these records and done all this accounting and checked all these little boxes, so that I can send a paper into the government that says Straightforward Christian Ministries doesn't owe you any taxes, Uncle Sam. Now, that's $1,000 that could go to buy food, to feed hungry people,
uh-huh.
to do whatever.
Uh-huh.
But my accountant gets it.
Well, and just as any other advance that has taken place where society changes or technology changes, there will be the sudden removal or slow removal. You know, as an example, when oil stops being used because we have all electric cars, oil companies will still be around, but they're going to be much smaller and smaller part of what's going on. Oil is used in a lot of other things, but obviously in gasoline, it's a huge thing. Well, you know, they're going to have to deal with that, because those changes, to have new technology, to have the change is to own it, and we're going to own it. So if we have a new technology, old technologies go away, those jobs go away, those people are reabsorbed into another line of work or some new technology that needs their skill set. That's going to happen to accounting and whatnot, because for the most part, hopefully, most of those regulations will go away. We don't have to use these accounts in the same way that we did before. So that's just the natural part of the evolution of society that will happen. But like you said, you're paying that money out. You know, he's paying that money out as well, because he's going to go use your $1,000 to, you know, participate in the economy. But his job won't be as necessary as it was under for IRS purposes. And that would be very nice. I think everybody would probably, I don't want to turn it into a discussion, but I think whatever arguments you have against a flat tax, one of the big things it does is simplifies your ability to understand what the heck it is you owe, and all the other stuff. And to know that once you've paid it, you don't have people looking at your stuff potentially for 5 years where they can come back at you and, you know, ask you to audit, go back, and you have to keep records for 5 years. And if you don't have the records, then they can say, well, since you don't have the records, we're just saying that it's this way. And then you owe more. And then because you owe the more, now you owe the penalty as well. And, you know,
is it any wonder that half the population takes anxiety medication?
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully that is going to go away, and that would be very nice, and we'll see if that occurs in our next thing. I'm sorry, but I just want to say this. It's not Democrats straight up, but it's further left. They don't like the flat tax, and one reason they don't is because if Ted, who makes $30,000 a year, pays 20% of that, which is $6,000, and Andy over here makes $100,000, he makes 100, so he's going to pay 20. Let's just say the flat tax was across the board. What the far left doesn't like is that the first guy who made, let's just say he made 30, so he's left over with 24,000. The guy that makes the 100 is left over with 80,000. That bothers them. That's not right that he's left over. He has $80,000. How can that be right when this guy, he paid his taxes, he's only left with, you know, $24,000. This guy has $80,000. That can't be right. That has to be corrected. Something has to be – there's something out of balance there.
Here's my thoughts, and I know the argument against this, but the flat tax that makes sense to me is a flat sales tax. In other words, earn all you can, encourage growth, encourage business, investment. You only pay the tax when you spend some of the money. Now, people, I know the argument is that people say, well, okay, but the guy who's already made all of his money and is now retired, he's being penalized. All right, well, somebody's going to have to bite the bullet somewhere. Somewhere along the way, somebody's going to have to take it. So take one for the team. But going forward, that is just so simple. There's no bookkeeping. There's no record keeping. There is no IRS. There's no need for one. If a company spends money, they pay a tax. If an individual spends money, they pay a tax. It's sales tax, and everybody pays the same percentage, whatever that is, whatever is deemed to be fair and equitable. And then it all, the whole nightmare just goes away.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
It'd be like waking up from a bad dream.
Oh, my goodness. I mean...
Well, there you are.
Oh, okay.
All right. Well, we've set her.
Yeah. We have the most bloated, the most complicated tax code on planet Earth. I mean, no one comes even close. Now, the market has crept back up to 1281.82. David was talking earlier about support and resistance and previous areas of support and resistance. And there's a really good example up on the screen right now. Overnight at the London Open, price ran up to 1281.25. It then sold off, and then it ran right back up to 1281.25. Right there, and sold off, and now it's creeping back up for a third time. The fact that it's a weekly trading zone, that's not my point. My point is simply that that's price respecting that level. And that's knowable because you look left and you see, okay, that's where it stopped overnight, so it stopped there again. Not that big a surprise. But up here, now... when you don't have an immediate point of reference to the left, you got to go way back. And if there's nothing there in this contract, then you got to go into your memory banks. That's kind of what you were talking about, David. And we got into the discussion of the squares and how you project. And I said yesterday, I said, hey guys, if this thing breaks above 81.82, I got nothing. This is where this is the part of the river I understand. And once it goes above 82, then I'm out. You know, I go to the sidelines until we get back inside. Once it comes back inside, I understand that, and I can do something with that. But if it pops back out again, then I'm in the same position I was over here yesterday. Now, I do know that the market can pop out, and it can run. And if I'm willing to accept that it's popped out, that it's going to run, and it's not going to return, then, I could trade that, but in the back of my mind, I'm always thinking it's going to pop back down into here. that it's headed back
and
here.
Very well may. Listen, that's a great example of just trading what it is you understand.
This
is a river, and there's only so many parts any person can know about the river. And you find the part that you understand, and you trade that part. You get into the river during that time.
Do you want to look at
a couple of things this morning. Earlier this morning, we had an indication. This is just another example of how, I don't know what to say about it, just the unusual quality of the market. We had an indication this morning that we had sent out to our institutional people that the market, the low of anywhere between 74 and 72, that the market would advance whatever the price low was in the second hour of this morning, whatever the price low was, would advance 11 points off that bottom. And they put the low in the first hour at 72.75. If you add 11 to that, that would bring you up to 83.75. They got up to 82.25. Now, that shows us that, first of all, that they did that. They did it 1 hour early, which would be difficult to trade. So I don't trade that part of the river because I don't like 1 hour early. Sometimes I can because there's other issues that will help me get in, but I couldn't. And the fact that they didn't quite do the full 11 shows me that internally the volatility has sort of reduced. I mean, that would normally be the amount. They missed it only by a point, whatever, but that would normally be what the market would do in today's session. Now, let's move forward from here and let's take a look at what we have going on. For those people who have reflected wave, they know that this morning's low put in an important bottom on the reflected wave chart. And that the advance that we had was the typical that you would get off of reflected wave. Having said all that, we have some interesting setups for the potential for interesting setups for later today. The market's really quiet, so I want you to take any of these things with caution. And because there have been inversions left and right, because the market is, you know, this volatility and inversions may have a connection, I'm not even sure if I should mention this, but let me just say a couple of things, and you can play with it as you may. For today, in the sixth hour, the natural position for the market with prices above today's low, which is that 72 level, that 74/72 is in our panel as an important initial support level for today, that would normally send prices up to retest the 1289. Our target was 88 yesterday, but the price actually went to 89, so let's just use that to test the 89 level. For me, because the market has been tricky, the only way that I would actually trade this is if the market started to close on some time frame above 83. That only leaves 6 points in there, but 6 points are still there, and that would be an easy 6 points to get. So if later in the day we get above that period, that 82 to 83 level, then you may want to consider trading it up to 89. Otherwise, I would tell you just to be long and go do that, but I'm going to not say that. I don't want you to do that because of the nature of the market. We have low volatility today. If the market volatility is very low, they won't reach any important targets. They did do basically the 11-point deal, but still not quite reaching that. So we have a very almost like a holiday market today. We do have a lot of potential indications of roadmaps and other setups for next week because of the stretched market, the fact that we are 1 week late on the top, and et cetera. We have a lot of things that are lining up now. So I'm expecting both Monday and Tuesday to have several roadmaps in them, and we'll give these out as the market confirms in those times. But for today, that would be the only roadmap-y type of setup that I would be interested in trading right now, given with the market conditions where we'd get it back above 82 to 83, and then you would at that point you would have to be buying where most traders don't like to buy. Most traders, like we talked about, like to trade around the edges. We'll get in here, way down here, we'll get up here, but I'm not going to trade in the middle there. But I'm telling you, the middle has a lot of good in it, and it takes some practice to get yourself to trade the middle. But, and this would be the middle, kind of, wouldn't it? If we get above 82, 83 on hourly close, or some time frame, 15-minute close, whatever's left there, you could trade that up to for the test or attempt at 88-89. And for many people, you know, that there's 6 points there, that, you know, a lot of people trade for 2 and 3 points. Maybe that's all you get out of that. But that would be only if they do that. Don't take that trade. This isn't good enough, nor am I comfortable enough to give it to you in that format where you would just go long here to go do that.
In what way so is let's trading wait for that. Like a Twinkie?
I'm sorry?
I said, in what way is trading like a Twinkie?
It's really sweet and not good for you? I don't know.
The best part's in the middle.
Oh, there you are. Oh, you're good, Dwayne.
I'm on fire.
Yeah, this is Dwayne on fire, okay? So just for those of you who want to know what he's all about, this is a really good day for Dwayne.
That's funny.
He's having a great day. That's very funny. Anyway.
Yeah, I had this social worker come to my house yesterday. She was like 12. Hey, notice, yeah. David, how as we grow older, gracefully, you and I, that the people who our hands are now in the lives of people who aren't even old enough to shave. I mean, I open the door and there's like this little waif standing at my door. Now I was told that, you know, the guardian ad litem was coming, which is Latin for the kid's government appointed attorney to you know, work in their bit. And so I expected an attorney to show up, but it turns out that the guardian ad litem that we got is such a big shot that she doesn't have to come out herself. She actually can send a social worker in her stead. Her firm is big enough to hire someone. And so I open the door and there's this little waif standing there with like a notepad and a pen in her hand, and I was like, I'm looking, I was like, is this the appointment, or is she like, you know, selling Girl Scout cookies? Can I help you? Are you Mr. Reeves? Yeah. Are you from the? I am. Oh, come in. And I don't know. I'm sure she has a master's degree. She's probably 25, but she looked 12, and she was extremely nervous. And she came in. And she sat down, and she just looked a little freaked out. This is not my first time at this particular rodeo, so I said, I tried to make her as comfortable as possible. I said, "But would you like to ask us a few questions now?" And she's like, yeah, that's exactly. I would like to ask you guys, okay. And I just kind of, you know, helped to walk her through the whole thing. It was really interesting. The last time the actual attorney came out, so see, he was from a smaller firm where he had to do his own legwork. But this time the kids kind of hit the lottery, got a big firm, and so they have a worker that comes out specializing in that. I don't know. I just felt the need to share that because.
Well, they didn't leave with your kids, did they?
No. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Well, that's good. That's always a good sign.
In fact,
I like it when they leave and the kids are still in the house.
Yeah,
that's always good.
When she was getting ready to leave, I mean, it was sort of abrupt. I said, "Don't you want to go upstairs and like see the kids' bedrooms or anything?" She goes, "No. They're fine." I go, "Oh, okay, great. Thank you so much." You know, she was really nice, really pleasant. I mean, and I know she went back and wrote a good report. So it's just the older we get. I mean, I talked about this last night in the workshop. When you go to Starbucks and a cop walks in, you know, this guy's got a gun. He's got one of those death ray things, what you call it, the stinger, the taser. Yeah. but yet he doesn't own a razor, you know. And I remember as a kid, because my grandfather was the sheriff, I remember my grandmother complaining one day about some cop that had pulled her over who wasn't old enough to shave, and she went on and on about that thing, and it didn't really make sense then, but now it makes
perfect sense. But it's making a lot of sense now, isn't it?
It sure is.
And I just want to say, for people that are getting, you know, up in years a little bit, I happen to be 54. I look at college students, and they look like, to me, they look like junior high school kids. I can't identify them as college students. They look like kids in junior high to me. And I remember being 5 and 7 and 10 and looking at college students and thinking, oh, these people are, you know, really old. It's so funny how your perceptions change based, you know, we talked about this with regarding time, the feeling of a summertime and all the stuff, the logarithmic percentage-based nature. Now here we are with age. We've been on both sides of it. We've been young and everybody looks old. Mm-hmm. Now we're older and everybody looks really young.
Speaking of college kids, David, Now, this isn't a spoiler, okay? This isn't a spoiler. This is a teaser to make sure you get the book. Steve Jobs, when he went to college, he refused to wear shoes.
Okay.
He went to college barefoot. Now, if it got really, really cold, he would put on a pair of sandals. But other than that, he went barefoot, and he was so smart that they let him.
And, well, and he turned out okay.
Well, no, I'm telling you, this guy, you get into this, you're going to go, because you're going to go, this cannot be the guy that stood up and did the, you know, the presentations for Apple with the iPhone, the iPod, because
he changed over time. He did.
Well,
he grew up and changed
through
over time.
A process. I mean, he was a guru chaser, did tons of LSD. In fact, the whole thing that got me kind of interested in him, I'm going to just say, is that he did an interview not too long ago, and he named the three most important things. The person interviewing said, "What are the three most important things you've done in your life?" I don't even remember what two of them are, but one of them was taking LSD.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what? And so I'm only up to about the fourth chapter. This is a 25-hour audiobook, and I'm on like, you know, an hour and a half, I guess, because I keep falling asleep, but that's another story. Fascinating, this guy. He grew up, he was adopted, at one point at college, he just told them, it's like, you know, you guys are kind of boring me. If you'll stop charging my parents for me to come to college, and if you'll let me just wander around barefoot and just pop in on whatever class I want, then I'll hang around. He was so smart, they said okay.
Aww.
They stopped charging him. He didn't have a certain class schedule. He could just pop in and out of classes. And he says one day he was like bored, and he stumbled into a class on I forget the name of the class, but he said had he not stumbled into that class that day, and I mean literally stumbled into that class, if he had not stumbled into that class, that computers today probably would not have different fonts on them. It was some kind of like a calligraphy class or something. Mm-hmm. And he learned about the sans serif and the this and the that, and he put it into the Macintosh, which then got it translated over to the PC and then to all computers where you know, you go in with Microsoft Word, whatever the case, and you got all these beautiful different fonts that you can choose from. That came from him and from his experience. And you got to get the book, David.
I know, and listen, I want to say something that struck me from just a very small thing that I had read about him, and there's a lot of things that you will probably find in his and other people's lives that might strike you. If you could learn the lessons from the people around you, you wouldn't have to live 1,000 lives. Let's just say that if that was the case, that you had to keep coming back until you got it right. If you would just learn lessons from other people rather than having to have them, you know, let that be the lesson for you rather than you having to go have an experience of your own to make it your own lesson, you could save an awful lot of time. That also goes for insights. I remember him saying, this struck me, this is something that he struck me, he said, when the iPod, that's the music thing, when the iPod came out, the day that it came out, he was sitting with one of his associates or his wife or somebody, and he was looking, he was holding one of them in his hand, and he said, well, there's nothing I can do now, I can't do any more, you know, it's out there, it's done. And what that meant to me was, you know, he's an engineer. He has a certain vision of how he elegance and things that he wants in his product. He still wanted to improve the product, but he knew there was a cutoff line and there had to be a point where the product was put out there. And even on the day that the product was released, he was sitting sort of lamenting and almost afraid that it still wasn't quite good enough. He could probably improve it even as it was, because it bothered him on some level. It was like, you know what? There's nothing more we can do. It's out there today. This is it. You know, this is it, this is what people are going to see. And it changed the world. But he still wanted to continue. It wasn't quite good enough for him, or he was worried that, you know what I'm saying? It struck me that even on the day that he's releasing a product, he was almost lamenting that there's just, you know, too bad we couldn't have done better. We couldn't have done more with it. That
you
struck
know,
me.
And it was such a cutting-edge thing. I went out. It was right around when they came out. It was right around my wife's birthday, and I rushed out, and I bought her one very first ones for her birthday, and it laid around our house for probably a year or two before we actually, I mean, it wasn't like the Walkman. You know, if I'd given her a Walkman, she would have known how to just pop a cassette in there and just, like, you know, go jogging or something. But this was this new thing, this iPod, and it was, like, really cool, and it's going to, but we didn't get it. You know, I don't think I downloaded iTunes onto my computer for, I don't know how long. That thing just sat there in the box, and it was like, hey, you got an iPad, iPod. And she's like, yeah, I got an iPod. And then we would forget about it for a few months. And then I would get to thinking. And then it was actually after I started, I think, doing the podcast, that I thought, I'm making these things. I could probably listen to it on that device she's got in the box. And so, but it really did. It was the beginning of a huge change, a paradigm shift in how the world communicates, works, lives, and this guy's fascinating. You know, somebody asked this morning in the live trading room, I don't know if I'm getting this exactly right, but do you have more or less respect for him? Or do you view him in the same way now that you are getting some of the backstory on who he really was? And I said, you know, that's a very interesting question. It certainly changes how I look at him, but it's certainly not, it's not putting me in a place of being judgmental. If anything, I'm starting to feel like I might know him because he sounds like, you know, any of us. He sounds human in that he had all kinds of frailties and quirks and eccentricities. Anyway.
Yeah, the computer crowd is filled with eccentric quirks and things like that. Anybody, I mean, the people who are really into computers, I've employed a number of them over the years, and a large number, actually, and I can tell you that almost without exception, there's only one exception, that every person that is really good at computers and coding has all kinds of unusual things going on in their head. They think differently, they process differently, they act differently, and I've seen that for myself. I mean, it's just the nature. Each one of them is different in the way that they're different, but they all have it. And if you, almost seems like people who are designed born with the ability to do computer programming, and it really connects with them. They don't have to struggle with it. It's easy for them. They're wired a little differently than the average person.
Yeah.
And they think differently than the average person. So, I'm not surprised to hear that Steve Jobs, who was very much that way, had that. He also had something that a lot of computer people don't have, at least the ones that I've dealt with, which was that very, very astute artistic elegance that he wanted in his products, which is one of the things that makes Apple stand out, is that they're not just computers doing tasks. They're beautiful. They're sensuous. They're elegant. They're smooth. They're gradient. You know, all the things that he wanted in there that you wouldn't expect necessarily from a computer type of person. It doesn't mean much to the computer people that it has all that stuff. But, you know, take a look at the iPhone. And look at it, even to this day, the Apple product, the iPhone, has the smoothness of the screen that they still haven't been able to duplicate, at least as recently as just a month or so ago, in some of the Android operating systems, where they really didn't pay that much attention to that same smooth, from screen to screen smoothness, changing pages in books, the gradient making from large to small. He really went to town on that stuff. He wanted that stuff to be really tactile, really smooth, and it makes a difference. And it's really one of the remarkable additions that was in him, that he really had a touch for that. Whereas somebody like a Bill Gates or somebody, if he had designed a phone, it wouldn't have that most likely in it. Bill Gates didn't really
Jobs
pick
was
up
not
on that.
He was not really a programmer or an engineer. He was the other part of that process. That's why he worked together so well with Wozniak, however you say it. Not that he didn't know a thing or two about computers, but someone just typed in too that, you know, well, Jobs wasn't a programmer. That's true, he wasn't. And he really wasn't an engineer either. But there's no denying the talent and skill and the grasp that he had to know what people wanted before we knew we wanted it or needed it.
Mm-hmm.
Dan mm-hmm. says that he, in his own defense, he became a programmer because the line for that major was the shortest.
That's funny.
I think he's joking. Hey, Patrick's got a serious question. He would like to pin you to the mat here for just a moment. David, you mentioned a possible trade setup you gave to your institutional clients this morning. You wouldn't necessarily suggest this as a roadmap or current outlook in Messenger Pro as well?
Well, the reason we didn't is because in Messenger Pro, I don't like to give out the roadmap on the one unit early. I wanted to, had the second hour of this morning touched or even gotten near 72 to 73, you would have seen it. It was already set up and loaded to go out. But if it had done that in the on-time hour, then we would have been very anxious to trade that as an ordinary trade. I don't take, for the most part, I don't take the one unit early, especially with the low volatility that we saw this morning. And so we left that out. Listen, I would love to put it out. If this is nothing that we're holding back, I would love to be able to take credit, you know, our product, we show the product, and later we say, look, we said these things, and look what the market did. So I would love to be able to take credit for that, and so I have an incentive to put it out. But I also have an incentive to put it out in such a way that it can be traded reasonably with reasonable risk. The one unit early allows for too much time for the market to a whole another hour has to go by. They could be substantially lower. The whole setup could change. So in the most cases, I need to see, even if it was just 5 minutes into the second hour, that they went down and touched that price, then you would have seen that go out. So instead of putting it out there as a general indication that the first or second hour will have this advance to 83 or whatever, the only people that we would give it to, and to be blunt, the institutional people, you know, I know this sounds so capitalistic, but they pay to get imperfect information. They want to be able to get a general idea of what's going to happen, even if it hasn't set up in the way that we want it to. They want the general idea. And we don't like to give out the general idea. And we do sometimes on this radio program, but for paying people, we want to give it to them when it's set up perfectly so that, you know, the on-time, at least with the on-time hour.
Yeah, and I think the opposite is true. Sometimes you give out on this show what those guys don't get.
That is correct. I mean, it just depends on whether or not it's set up ideally for, we're on the program, we're talking, and we do give some general ideas out on this program. That's why a lot of the Messenger Pro people will listen in and want to, you know, in case we happen to mention something that could be useful to them. But that's really the reason why. They've had this morning's second hour touch 72.73. Bingo, that thing would have been shot out instantly as a full-on roadmap for the advance. It's just that they did it all in the first hour, and they rallied up. And, you know, I hope that's the real answer. That's the real and only answer to that question.
Okay.
I want it to be at least in the on-time hour. And we will, by the way, I can't guarantee you this, but we will have one most likely in the third hour of Monday's session. That will be a Messenger Pro one, and one possibly prior to then. Because, you know, today's Friday, we've already gone through a number of hours today, it's very quiet, so it's likely that the next roadmap will actually occur in Monday's session. So I hope that helps your understanding about why that would be, and that's it. If you want, we can switch over to gold and some of these other markets real quick and see if there's anything happening there that we can also make a comment on and whether or not there would be something valuable to do. I just want to repeat, you know, when it comes to gold, this is just a great, great example of how markets are tricky before big moves. We've talked about this for a number of days, but we had originally called for October 14th to be a low for a 70-point advance off of what was then maybe a 1646. So if you take the 1646, that means we'd be looking for the market to get up to 716 or higher. I think it was 70. Yeah, that was the initial move, would be 70, and then the potential for double that, okay? The potential for double that. So instead of doing that, it made a top rather than a bottom, and they went down that same amount. They went down 70 points. And we had mentioned on the radio program that on the day of the 20th, because the 20th and 21st were important dates in several markets, and we do that analysis. We're looking for several markets to show the same date. we said that if the market closed above the 1621, or excuse me, 1617, that the market would, that would likely be the bottom, and that the market would have a multi-day advance off that level. Well, now go add, take 1604 from that bottom and add the 140, the total move that we're expecting. Ultimately, they had, we were going to have a 70-point move, and then it would be double that. That would bring you to 1744. Yesterday's, or today's high, is 1754. So that's the energy. That's the move from that low on the 20th to up here today, the 28th. That's the full 140-point move that we were forecasting. But instead of doing it from the 14th, they did a little sachet. That's a little term for a little dance move. Inverted, did the 70 down, and started from there. I did not know they were going to do that. That sounded like Johnny Carson. I did not know that. The market was going to go down first and then do the run from there. That's an unusual move. And here we are now. And so it just, you know, I just laughed to myself because the markets are, you know, they get tricky before these bigger moves. But they've almost done, they've done the exact move, the 140 points, 70 times 2. The initial move was going to be 70, a reaction, and then an additional. They just ran straight up and did the 140 points between the low on October 20th and yesterday. It's just interesting how the market plays these things out. And I've mentioned this before. I'm still looking and watching inversions to try to understand something more about why they occur and anything else I can find. You know, a lot of times you want to leave yourself open for new ideas. You don't want to focus on, you can keep saying, well, why? That's your mantra. Why is this happening? Why is this happening? Sometimes it's good just to not worry about why it's happening, but just keep looking at it. Just look at something. And that's kind of what I'm doing with the inversions, because they've become more important recently in all markets because of the volatility, I am assuming. But I'm just watching them closer and seeing if there's anything that sticks out so that we can improve our use of this piece of information and make, you know, which would make for better trades and better use of the inversion when it happens. So the fact that we've done the 140 points up now leaves gold at kind of a short-term critical juncture on the upside. I think the swing high has been 154. So just, you know, $10 higher than the original forecast from the then current low, and they've completed it now. So another date is coming up for gold, and I do want to mention it. If you do want to keep an eye on this, this will be November 3rd. I think I've mentioned this once before. I'm not sure. But this is going to be a date for a very sizable reversal. We'll talk about that as it gets there. That will be tradable, and we'll talk about it as we get closer in time to that. Any question on that, Dwayne, or anything that you want to comment on gold?
No, I'm good.
Other than the fact that you have some of it in your teeth? Because you've gone to those kind of old-style dentists to try to save a few bucks. They put gold in. No, go ahead.
What was that guy's name? That his name was General... The guy that did Pants on the Ground on American
Idol. Oh,
Island.
I don't know his name, but I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah. When you said gold teeth, you made me think of him. He was...
Yeah.
That guy had a lot of personality.
He certainly did.
Okay, we've talked about gold. Let's whip out our euro. And this is a really good example of... Well... The euro, we ran into our upper zone just as we did on the ES. And our little indicators here, you know, blue for bullish, white for potential change of trend, red for bearish. It's kind of not looking so good for the euro right now. So I would love to hear.
What was the upper zone for you there?
It was 142.25/142.30.
Okay, and your lower zone, just out of curiosity?
You mean the very lowest one we had for the whole...
No, the one that's right below there. I just can't quite see it on your chart.
That one is 139.60/65.
Okay, 139.60.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find that here. Okay, I got you.
So this is today's action, Friday flat. This is what happened yesterday, Thursday, on the 27th.
Okay.
And then if we back up to Wednesday, we had a... You know, a nice little zone-to-zone move from the 39.60 down to the 38.30. So, but, I mean, that was just a powerful move there. Of course, news that, you know, the whole crisis over there has been resolved. But now this, so what are your thoughts going forward on the euro? Do you have any forecasts?
I'm looking at it right now. The date of October 27th for the euro is very important. That actually is the day that they made the big move. Mm-hmm. But this is actually a turning point date. And you can see one day early, we made a bottom at 137.92, yep. And the market has had a powerful move up. I'm not sure, but let me just take a look at one other chart here, and I just want to see if there's, if I don't have anything today, which I probably don't at this moment, let me just take a quick look here. We'll put it this way. We've had a nice little pullback, no big deal in the euro here, and I'm including Globex in all this, so...
Yeah, this is a Globex chart, too. It's hourly.
This includes all this.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if I have much to say here. I will say that if you want to, this is another market that will have something prior to this date, but November 9th is important in the euro. This is a date that will have an important reversal for us. Prior to that, we'll probably have something as well. But, no, I don't have anything that I'd be comfortable giving out right now on the euro just yet. A very quiet day today.
Part of my comment, really, about weakness in the euro, I mean, that's what I see right here in this chart. But I've also seen a number of headlines and a number of predictions, whether it was in email or on TV or whatever, that the euro, by the end of that, you know, things look great now, but by the end of the year, you know, mm-hmm. The euro is going to be down at like 129.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah.
So, I'm not trying to say you should get short up here for the move to 129. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that we hit a high, and like you said, we're in a retracement right now. But I just don't know. I don't know. I guess we have to see how it plays out. Are they done tinkering with that thing over in Europe? I mean, if they like...
I don't think so. I think there's other changes. You know, if you're tying that news to the euro, and I think there is definitely a connection between that news and the euro, I don't think they're done. I think the deal has basically been struck, but there's a lot of other parts to it that are going to be laid out over time. So, no, I don't think it's fully done.
Okay. There was a question for you on the gold. From Richard, did the forecast 70-point goal move have to do with squares or spatial relationship as to why the move would
all
be
of the price
points?
Things that we do, almost without exception, if we're giving a price forecast, if we're saying there's going to be a 140-point move, that is all from roadmap. I will back that up with squares and other things if there's an important level that the market's going to run into, because the square principle is very powerful by itself. If, as an example, on the way up to completing the 140 points, if the market had struck, or if there was a square in front of, like prior to them reaching that, that would be an important place where in the forecast you would have me saying something like, we expect, although we're expecting the full 140 points, when the market gets to, you know, such and such price, which would be prior to the completion of the 140, we expect a reaction off that level and then a continued advance. We would say that because that would be where a square is, and the market almost without exception will react off of a square. So it wouldn't halt the total forecast from being completed, because that's based on another principle, which is that the market has energy contained in it, and that energy has to be released, et cetera, and it would be released. But it would add another wrinkle to the forecast that we could later say, yeah, we said it was going to go up 140 and that it would pause at this level, have a reaction, and then continue higher. And in the whole, when you see the whole thing play out, had there not been an inversion, as an example, if there was no inversion on October 14th, and if there was a square there, it would look like a pretty comprehensive forecast. The market bottoms at such and such a price. You guys have seen the roadmaps before, so it would look like a really good call. And so if there's a square in the way, on the way up to that, it gives us an opportunity to throw in another little curve about what the market's going to do on the way to completing that forecast. And in the end, it looks really good to see it lay out and play out all the way that it's supposed to. But any of the price forecasts that we give where we say the market's going to bottom here and it's going to go up 140 points or it's going to go to this level. The majority of those are done with roadmaps. What squares allow you to do is to buy the market at a particular price level, and if the next square up is at such and such a level, you can be pretty sure it's going to run there, but it's not the same as having a roadmap. It's not doesn't have the same, you know, the roadmap even has a date or a time, even an hour, that the price is going to be reached at. A particular fourth hour of today will touch such and such a price. We don't always give that out in the roadmaps, but they're there. It's inherent in the roadmap that there's a time factor involved as to when the move will start and when it will end. But the use of squares, the main use of squares is to lay out very important support and resistance levels and to know that when one is exceeded, the next one is going to be run to in the great majority of instances. So that's another one of those real basic principles that I use in my trading every single day. I use reflected wave every single day. I use squares every single day. I can't do roadmaps every single day because they require, they're more complex and they require several things to line up. They're part of spatial relationship forecasting, in which you're really looking at three different things, and or worst case, two different things, and they have to get into certain positions in order for you to know that a certain event is going to take place. You know is in quotes, because you can't know for certain anything, but you can know with high probability that certain things are going to occur. The gold move, this is a really good example of how, you know, the market can really be tricky before putting out that 140 points. And so it's just the way it played out. But it doesn't mean the gold market isn't good. There's plenty of great moves in gold markets, and I don't want to dissuade people from taking advantage of the forecast, because in most cases, the market will run and do the numbers it's supposed to do. The kind of trickiness it will do is different than what we saw in gold here. The kind of trickiness is that it might, you know, retest a level or flush you out of a position and then reverse and go up, and then finally it goes. This was a whole complete inversion prior to the 140 points. This was a whole move down where they inverted completely on October 14th. Instead of going up, they went down, and then they started from there, the 140 points up. That's what I'm saying. I really want to watch this more and try to understand that principle better. It was a very small part of it originally, and the more I watch markets, I realize that this is, you know, this is something that markets do, and it's still a relatively small percentage of times, but I want to find out more about, try to understand more about what is really happening there. So right. I hope I answered Richard's question.
I think you did.
And if that's the Richard I know,
it is.
How is Canada?
Oh,
and he can type that back, because I'm sure Canada's just doing fine when he does type back.
I'm guessing it's cold right now.
It's probably cold.
Things are great. Yeah, Michael this morning mentioned that they're expecting 3 to 6 inches of snow tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're just now breaking out our long sleeve shirts here in Phoenix.
Well, I swept 3 inches of partly cloudy off my doorstep last night. A little humor there.
Good.
Anyway, so listen, the market's at a standstill. There's nothing to do here. I think it's probably wise to just call it a day. We may end up late in the day seeing what we talked about earlier for the potential, but wait for the upside move we talked about, but wait for the market to get above 83 if you're going to take advantage of that. And I don't, you know, with the volatility and stuff here, you just want to be real careful expecting much out of the market today.
Now, I showed you guys this little move right here to the upside. We got 4 points, and then right as we're coming on the show, I pointed out this little move that was setting up to the downside, which was good for, I don't know, what was it, 78 down to 75. It was good for 3 points. And then we got the identical move right here back up from 77 to 81, so 4 points to the upside. And we talked this morning in the trading room about, with all the movement, all the stuff that happened yesterday, a quiet inside day to day would be what a lot of people would say that's what, you know, you should expect, that's what you'll get. And so far, I mean, how many hours we got left? Two?
Couple, yeah.
Yeah. And David, is there any number here as we close out, any number here that would trigger to you that they would get a move on this late in the day?
Well, for the upside, like I said, getting above later in today's session, getting above the 83 level, and again, giving the the thing that there's very low volatility here, but they could still do it. The natural position for the market would be a retest of 89, which was R88 yesterday, but they did go to 89.25. So they would do a test or attempt at that, only, though, if they get above the 83 level. I would only want people to take advantage of that.
Okay.
So that's about all I really have for today. You know, they tested the 72.73 on the downside, and we're inside that range. This is a pretty small range day.
And
you know,
they may be
basically, it's a $10
down
range.
They may be headed back down to try and test it again.
Well, we'll see.
If they go back to test 72 again, David, would you be a buyer there for a move back up in the range?
I wish I was more useful to you today. I don't know if I would be a buyer there.
Well,
If they tested that and we had a reflected wave bottom off of a 15 or 30 minute or some reasonable time frame chart, the answer probably is yes.
Okay.
I would be. But right now, as it just sits right now, I think I'm sort of apathetic. I don't have any real interest in the market right at this point. So, you know, my enthusiasm is a little less about it.
Well, I think your feelings mirror the market. It's a little apathetic. I mean, it's put in a tremendous week, a tremendous month, and there's only one trading day left in the month. So for those who have a vested interest in the market closing the month at these levels, money managers and other people who, you know, their commissions or whatever are based upon, you know, where we close out for the month. I mean, there's a lot of people that really don't want to see this. You know, it's like, you know, not, just don't mess with it. Just let it sit here. We don't have to go higher. We've done, you know, we've had the biggest monthly move in history in the Dow. And since 81 or whatever in the S&P. And, oh, the NASDAQ, you ask about that. Largest monthly point gain since 2001.
Okay, that's still pretty impressive.
Interestingly enough, largest percentage gain since 2010. But largest point gain since 2001 in the NASDAQ. And that's based on somebody else's numbers. I did not crunch those, so if they turn out to be faulty, blame the guy on... I'll find the guy you can blame.
You find the guy and you bring him to us.
I'll drag him in.
We'll hang him. All right. Well, Dwayne, listen, I hope everyone has a wonderful weekend. Get some different activity in your life other than markets. And I'll be back on Monday, of course, with you. Today is not a holiday, is it? Is any kind of strange, quirky little holiday?
No, Monday's a holiday.
Monday is a holiday. What is Monday's holiday?
Halloween.
Oh, is it? But that's a traded day. We're trading on that day.
Yeah, trick or treat. Yeah. Yeah, the market.
The traders take off Halloween, yeah.
The markets will be open. and I don't, you know, guys, I wouldn't call this pre-Halloween activity.
This is clearly pre-Halloween market activity.
Right. We see this every Halloween. So.
Right.
All right.
Very
well, David,
seasonal. It's a seasonal Halloween move. No.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you very much. And you guys have a great weekend as well. And we'll try to put some better trades together next week. And I think there's really going to be some good indications. So I'm looking forward to it. Dwayne, thanks so much for having me on the program. It's been 6 years, and I'm still enjoying it and you and your listeners.
Namaste, Davey.
All right, thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
I didn't notice what time it was. All I know is that I fell in love with you. And if all my dreams come true, I'll be spending time with you. Every day's a new day in love with you. With each day,
okay, guys, that's going to wrap it up for me as well. I could ramble on about something here, but I'm just going to make a conscious decision not to. I would encourage you, if you've not taken the free trial, I will ramble about that for just a minute. Take the free trial. Even if you don't become a CFRN partner, which would be a shame, by taking the free trial and being in the live trading room with us for a full week, 2 hours a day, you get an idea of who we are, what we do, how we do it, what it's like, and, you know, it might be for you, it might not be for you. Point is you won't know unless you check it out. I sent out an email last night to everyone who has ever put their name on our little mailing list, and if you bothered to open that email, and it might have gone to your bulk mail folder, it might have gone to your spam, I don't know. But it looks like if you click the link, it takes you to a page like this, which kind of tells you my story and some of what I went through on this journey. And then it gives you an opportunity to take the free trial. So if you didn't get that email, if you can't find it in your spam box or your bulk mail folder, and you would like to receive that email so that you can go read that little story, I'd be happy to send you the link. You can email me, support@cfrn.net, and just say, hey, I didn't get that email you were yapping about, and I'll send it to you, which will point you to that page, and you can read it, and you can sign up for the free trial if you want. We are still giving away an iPad 2. We haven't talked about it a lot. I should probably talk about it more. Let me talk about it right now, since I brought it up. That's right. You can win an iPad 2. Right here, you take the free trial, and you're going like, yeah, but I already took the free trial. Okay, refer a friend. Just read what it says. If you refer a friend, your friend puts your name down here in the box, and then you get an entry in the drawing. We're giving it out the end of November. Okay, so there's still plenty of time to bring all your friends over and say, hey, just come take the free trial so I can win the iPad too. Once they come into the free trial, they'll either like what they see or not. They may not even have any interest whatsoever in trading e-mini futures. Well, do you really want to bore your friends for 10 hours just so you get a shot to win an iPad 2? I don't know. That's your moral dilemma to work through, not mine. So let me know how it turns out for you. What else? What else I got? That's it, I guess. Go back and look at the market one last time. I drew this little channel here. Okay, obviously, the fact that the top of this channel comes right in at the weekly zone, that gives me a preference to the downside. I'd be watching the middle here. Okay, if we get past the middle, good chance we go to the bottom. If we stop at the bottom, good chance we roll back to the top. Not overly excited about, I've got to go do life stuff, so I can't trade this afternoon. I'll do this real quick. I'll walk through. Because today was kind of, it was hard. I said I wouldn't do the opening bell, so I won't. First short trade going into, I don't know if we had news this morning or not. Guys in the room would know. And then this pullback here was good for, what was it good for? 75 to 75. I guess it was good for 2 points. This pullback was good for 2 points. This one was not. Well, ultimately it was. Right? No. No, it wasn't. It was just, this was that little choppy area right around news time. For me, not ever a good time to put on a trade. I'm not sure. I think there was news today. I was just getting into the trading room at that point and trying to read my email. Then we had this pullback long that ran from 76 up to 80. So that was a little 4-point swing. Then another short trade that didn't pan out. And another long trade that did. Looks like this short trade gave up. Did I trade that one? No. I think I gave 1.75 points. Or no. That was just a little over a point. See, it was difficult going. Now this one here, 78 down to 76. So yeah, there was a nice 2-point move there. So you take a little, you give a little back. This is trading inside a range. Life in the range. Home on the range. This one was good for 2 points to the downside. It did have a 1.25 drawdown. Now this is just the 2100 tick. I call it the naked chart because all I have on it is the cycle indicator and the CFMA1, which is the backbone of our indicator set. You'll see that on every chart we go to, it's always there. If I'm on a 10K, If I jump over to the YM, if I go to the hourly, see how this beautifully just no lag. Yeah. So, a close below that on the hourly, I'd really be looking at a move to the bottom of the channel. But on this quiet Friday with low volume and low volatility, when I come back this afternoon to sit down and upload the podcast and do all of that, and I had a request to post that Mayan calendar cartoon, which I will. If I come back this afternoon to do that and see that the market has made a big move, I genuinely will be somewhat surprised. I'll be less surprised if it's to the downside. If it's to the upside, I'll be very surprised. So, that's all I got, guys. It is the weekend, so like David said, you know, spend some quality time with your family. There's a saying that no one's dying breath was ever, "I wish I had spent more time at the office." It's usually, "I wish I had spent more time with the people I loved or people who loved me." So, I'm just going to say, spend time with your family. That's important. That's eternal. These markets, these are temporal, okay? Love your family. That's eternal, okay? And speaking of eternity, I'm certain I'll see you all in church on Sunday, right? Okay, very good. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Whoever you are, oh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to slam on the brakes. And I'm going to... Now, if I'm holding you up, you just go ahead. You don't have to stick around for this. I'm going to play that song I attempted to play at the opening of the show, because I've only heard it once myself, and I'd really like to hear it again. But it's going to take me a minute to find it. So you may or may not want to wait around. But for my own listening pleasure. And then I got to get out of here and get busy. But I got to look it up. Her name is, oh my goodness, Sarah Jarosz. Now I gotta go to this computer. And it's called the Transatlantic Session, TS5. I don't know what that has to do with it. Sarah Jarosz. J-A-R-O-S-Z. And the song is called Runaway. Now I've got to switch the video feed over to the other computer. And I know the video lags the audio a little bit, and so you might want to turn your head if that kind of thing bugs you. Change presenter. Yes.
I've just been here for like 2 days, and yeah. I've already just been so inspired and started writing songs, and it's been amazing. And I mean, especially at such a young age, to get to be a part of all this and be surrounded by so many amazing musicians, it's an amazing learning experience.
Follow me down through the lead us down a road where no one goes, we can run away. Come take my hand while I'm waiting here. Get away from it all and find what's real. If we don't get out now, the chance will reappear. We can run away.
Good or what? Alright, let me change the screens back. I put the link in for anybody that wants. If you can see it, the visual is really quite good as well. So if you stream it on your own computer, then you won't have that lag thing going on. Alright, I guess I'll return this to the hourly. I'll do something different for a change. I'll leave it on this chart. Can see how it meanders for the next hour and a half. All right, great. All right, back to what I said before. Thanks so much for tuning in, whoever you are, wherever you are. May God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this. There is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.